You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our podcast series titled Bispecific Antibodies for Non-Hodgkin's Lymphoma Treatment in Veterans Affairs Patients. We'll talk about current treatments, limitations, and new promises in this podcast hosted by Med Learning Group. Now, this is the second in the series of two. My name is Dr. Meenal Mulye. I will be the host of today's podcast, bringing you the latest highlights from American Society for Hematology Conference 2023, for specifically talking about the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma treatment. Joining me are Drs. Iris Isufi and Ellie Swong. Dr. Isufi is an associate professor of medicine, co-director adult CAR T-cell therapy program of hematology at Yale School of Medicine. She's a lymphoma specialist and co-leader cellular therapy clinical research team at Yale Cancer Center. Dr. Wong is an assistant professor of medicine at Yale School of Medicine, director, Newington Veterans Affairs Hematology Oncology Service. Hello, doctors. Welcome and thank you. And thank you for joining us back to discuss about the bispecific antibodies and the recent progresses that were talked about or discussed at the American Society for Hematology 2023 conference. So in the last podcast, we discussed the current bispecific antibody treatments for non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Here, let's delve a little bit into the latest data. So Dr. Isufi, could we start with discussing the treatments for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma? We did talk about epcoritamab and glofitamab in the last podcast. Can you expand a little bit on what the latest data for both these treatments shows?
Yes, absolutely. So in our last podcast, we talked about some of the phase one and early phase two reports with glofitamab and epcoritamab, as well as odronextamab for both relapsed refractory large cell lymphoma after two lines of therapy, and also some of the other lymphomas like follicular and mantle cell lymphoma. What was really exciting this year at ASH is that now we have some longer term follow-up data with these agents for large cell lymphoma, and in follicular lymphoma, we actually have 3-year follow-up data. So when we look at large cell lymphoma, you know, the landscape has changed, the treatment landscape has changed dramatically over the last few years, indeed, where we've had multiple antibodies or antibody drug conjugates approved. And some of those antibody drug conjugates have also made their way into the frontline setting. We are now using CAR T-cell therapy earlier in the line of treatment, you know, in the second line. And so we're seeing CAR T-cell relapses earlier on. So it was really interesting to see how patients who have had all of these treatments and who have already been exposed to CAR T, how they are doing and what their responses to bispecific treatments are. For example, the pivotal phase two results with glofitamab were presented for high-grade B-cell lymphoma, DLBCL-NOS, follicular and primary mediastinal. And what we saw is that glofitamab maintained a very high complete response rate of about 40%, with an overall response rate just over 50%. When they looked at, did a landmark analysis of by response at end of treatment, what they saw is that patients who achieved a complete response, they had a median progression-free survival of about 2 years, and their 18-month overall survival was about 80%. I mean, that is really remarkable. So patients who achieve complete responses do very well. The other informing presentation actually looked at baseline total metabolic tumor volume. And that's already been evaluated in the CAR T setting, but it's the first set of data I saw with bispecifics where they derive the total metabolic tumor volume from their baseline PET images. And there's this semi-automatic method that is used where they were able to show that patients that had a low baseline tumor metabolic volume really did much better and had a much higher progression-free survival. So of about 3.5 years, actually, when you compare it to patients who had a baseline high total metabolic tumor value, where their median progression-free survival was only about a year. And then the BICAR study was presented, which looked at glofitamab phase 2 data in patients specifically post-CAR T infusion, and was able to show very deep and durable responses and an increase in overall survival for patients who received glofitamab post-CAR T progression. So really, really exciting data.
Yeah. And how about odronextamab?
So odronextamab, the data was presented at ASH as well for patients with large cell lymphoma, relapse or refractory after two lines of therapy. There were about 127 patients on that study, and they had received a median of two lines of therapy, up to eight lines of treatment. The median duration of follow-up was almost 30 months on that study, and they had an overall response rate of 52% with CR rates of 31.5%. And for complete responders, again, that was very durable, much like we've seen with the other bispecifics at about 20 months. It was also very well tolerated, with CRS being the most commonly seen toxicity, followed by fever, anemia, thrombocytopenia. The majority of cases of cytokine release syndrome were low grade. They were generally confined to cycle one. They resolved very quickly with supportive measures. And the phase two ELM study with odronextamab did not report any ICANS events.
So both these therapies are using step-up dosing regimens. Do you think that is helping with the adverse events, that is helping with cytokine release syndrome, reducing the cytokine release syndrome?
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that was seen in the clinical trials, that fractionated step-up dosing has really helped mitigate cytokine release syndrome. For example, we participated in the mosunetuzumab trial. Became evident is that patients also seem to have less toxicity with subcutaneous administration as compared to the IV administration. And then with glofitamab administered prior to, with obinutuzumab administered prior to glofitamab, that is also helpful because provides some receptor occupancy competition with glofitamab, and that also mitigates the risk of CRS.
You did mention mosunetuzumab earlier. What did you see any updates for mosunetuzumab at ASH for follicular lymphoma?
Yes. So they presented updated efficacy and safety analysis, and they had a median follow-up of about 37 months. The study met its primary endpoint with a complete response rate, which was 60%, as opposed to 14% in the historical control, with a very statistically significant p-value. And this was administered IV every 21 days with step-up dosing in cycle one. Interestingly, They studied it in such a way that patients who achieved a complete response were able to stop therapy after 8 cycles. So it's nice to have some data in that setting, and that patients who had partial response were able to continue for 17 cycles. What we've seen with the bispecifics is that some of the partial responses can also be converted to complete responses with later lines of treatment. And patients were permitted to be retreated with mosunetuzumab at the time of relapse if they had previously achieved a complete response and they responded again. There was no mandatory hospitalization in this study as well. And I mean, at the 3-year mark, it's remarkable to see that about 2/3 of patients with complete response are alive and progression-free. And their 3-year overall survival rate was above 80%.
Yeah, that is really promising. That seems really promising. Do you think there's potential for odronextamab, glofitamab, epcoritamab in follicular lymphoma treatment or even mantle cell lymphoma treatment?
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, from the data we have seen so far, although the glofitamab, you know, had and mosunetuzumab for follicular lymphoma, you know, had some of the longer follow-ups, there is data with all of these bispecifics in follicular lymphoma and other indolent lymphomas as well. All 4 agents have been studied in follicular, and overall response rates have varied anywhere from, you know, 70 to 90%. And then complete responses, you know, have varied anywhere from 20 to 60%. We still don't have long-term progression-free survival data, but the median PFS is 1 year, up to 2 years with mosunetuzumab. So I think more data is coming, and I think we will see more combination data presented over the next year or two. And then in terms of mantle cell lymphoma, you know, glofitamab data was, you know, recently presented at ASH in combination with obinutuzumab pretreatment, showing very high overall and complete response rates. But I imagine that we will have more data presented with the other bispecifics as well. And the other, you know, the other disease entity where we need new treatment options is Richter's transformation, CLL, CLL with Richter's. So I think one of the that is one of the exciting areas where I'm hoping we will see some more data in the future, because that's been a challenging population for us to treat, and one where CAR T cell therapy has not worked as well as expected.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because that was at the back of my mind as to what about CLL, because that is such a challenging population. So Dr. Wong, how do you think these newer therapies, the bispecific antibodies that are coming up and the ones that are in clinical trial, could be incorporated within the VA population, the VA NHL population, and their management?
So thank you so much, Dr. Yousufi, for summarizing a lot of the exciting updates. And I think that goes along with the potential benefit in terms of durability of response to make it very worthwhile to create something within the VA system to increase access to these bispecific antibodies. And so I think that's one thing, a take-home message for my VA colleagues, certainly, is that there are a lot of members nationwide between the VHA Oncology Field Advisory Board, as well as the VA National Formulary Committee, and many others who are actively in the process of formulating a VA-specific guidance in terms of implementation of offering bispecific antibodies, certainly guidance in terms of safety protocols. We mentioned in our prior podcast some unique side effects that do need extra planning and expertise and resources in terms of cytokine release syndrome mitigation and less commonly neurotoxicity syndromes. And so I think that's one thing that as we continue to see more encouraging data, that will be something that I envision the VA will be very motivated to bring this into reality in the very near future.
And just thinking about this from the patient perspective, how open are the VA patients to accepting newer treatments, and how would you go about that?
That's a fantastic question. I am extremely fortunate to work where I am, where it's a privilege to take care of veterans. And one of the things that I see as a something that I see amongst many of our patients, even in the waiting room, is a very service-minded patient population, that even if there is something that might not help themselves, they're very motivated to help others. And so our clinical trial enrollment, actually in a number of oncologic-related studies, are one of some of the top enrollers nationwide, beyond just the VA setting. And so I think that also speaks to being very engaged and also being proactive in terms of asking for some of these more recently approved, very efficacious agents that we may not have ready availability right now at our local sites, but that is something that we partner with our. So one of the things with the VA sites across the country is that generally the major VA centers are very close, usually within the same city or very nearby to a major academic center. So there's a lot of cross-pollination, if you will, in terms of the providers that see our veterans in terms of access to not just clinical trials, but some of these newer therapies that we may not have the infrastructure just yet to offer. So the VA is very supportive of that in terms of what they call having community care referrals. And so one thing that we talked about briefly in the prior podcast also was partnering with our whether it be our colleagues at major academic centers in terms of potentially transitioning care with bispecific antibodies after the first cycle, if they don't have any major concerns from a side effect, to be able to bring treatments locally to our patients, or whether it's within the VA infrastructure, first beginning in our sites of expertise in Nashville, Tennessee, and Seattle, Washington, which historically have offered stem cell transplants and now cellular therapies, but then also potentially bringing it to local facilities within the VA once we have the proper infrastructure and the education and the resources in place.
Great. Thank you both. It was a pleasure speaking to both of you, and thank you for discussing such an important topic with us today. And to our audience, thank you for joining us today. It was a pleasure bringing this discussion to you and learning about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and bispecific antibody treatment. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council of Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. The CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity. Thank you.